takes his computer over to the Wendy's and logs in to their Wi-Fi. And I don't know what he does, but tonight we're going to find out. What are we looking for? I don't know. We could look around his computer a little bit, maybe find a login to Google, a login to Gmail, a login to Yahoo, maybe his Facebook profile. We'll see how we're feeling. But right now...
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Hi, we are
Sam,
Katie,
and Michaela from Castleton, and you are listening to
WGXC Acra
on 90.7 FM. Keep on smiling.
Girls Alive is a safe space for young women in grades 8 through 12 to meet at TSL every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. beginning December 6th. Our focus is growing strong and healthy whole beings within the context of community. As we learn what it takes to be memorable leaders in our community, we will be enjoying local foods, expressing hair art, singing, dancing, and moving to a collective body of music and sound. Want to take it up a notch? We will be learning proper sexual health, holistic remedies, and medicinal herbs. Let us be unstoppable. Information on how to get involved is available at wisebodies.org. See you there.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai, a sculpture and architecture park and international residency center in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dusk until dawn. Art Omai presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-aided and abetted radio.
Good evening. This is Kevin Factor, and you're listening to Foraging Ahead. Tonight, tough woman from a tough state for... tough times. Eva Wurzel from West Virginia sat down with me a couple years ago in a pub, remember those, and talked about her life. She's a remarkable young woman, and she comes from a remarkable family and a really interesting state. And so we're going to reminisce and remember we can get through this. We can get through this. We'll also hear a little music from Hazel Adkins, Lucinda Williams, the Carter family, and Ralph Stanley, and all folks from Appalachia, as Eva would call it. So enjoy and remember a time when things weren't so bad.
My mother's got the walk, this lonesome valley. She's got the walk, it's by herself. There's nobody here can walk it for her. She's got the walk, it's by herself. Most sinners got the walk, this lonesome valley.
My guest this afternoon is Eva Wurzel. Okay, and Eva's
from West Virginia.
From West Virginia, and you're living in the Hudson Valley. How long now?
Three 3.5 years.
Is that right?
That's right.
And you moved here straight from West Virginia?
Yeah, straight from West Virginia.
And where in West Virginia?
I've been living in Morgantown, which is like the infamous big college town, for 4 years. Before that, I've just lived like kind of everywhere in the valley, where Charleston is, where Huntington is, sort of. But yeah, I've pretty much just lived all over the state before I actually moved out.
Uh-huh. And you're from there?
I'm from there. Yep.
And your people are from there?
My people are from there. Yeah.
Yeah. How long will your family go back there?
I actually asked my grandmother a few weeks ago. She's really into like the ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. She's old and doesn't have anything else to do. So our family goes back probably like 6 or 7 generations.
Really? From in West Virginia?
Yeah, like before it was actually even West Virginia, like when it was still like Virginia. And yeah, I guess they're just kind of like scattered all over like Southern Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, just like that whole Appalachian. Mm.
Did your family have a foundation story? Like,
I feel like I've had to pull some strings to try to figure that out. You know, I knew both of my great grandmothers, and really the only thing I can remember about them is that they were both really, really, really superstitious.
Really?
Yeah. As far as like a foundation story, I don't really have one. I think I understand like the state's foundation story more than like my own family's sometimes.
So tell us about the West. For those of you who don't know, West Virginia was a part of Virginia up until the Civil War, and those counties seceded from Virginia when Virginia seceded from the Union.
Yeah, that's right. So, I can't speak for anybody living in like 1860, but it probably wasn't like a moral thing, but once you're that far west in Virginia, that's when you start hitting the mountains, because Eastern Virginia is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different landscape and demographic. But once you're like in those rugged mountains, you know, transportation becomes complicated, and like, you know, access to anything becomes complicated. There wasn't any real big money in that part of what was then Virginia. And so, like, being part of the Confederacy, like, there's, like, no reason for that part of the state to do it, because there were some, like, slave owners, but very, very few, because there wasn't any money, and, like, everybody was out there just, like, in these rugged mountains, and, like, no one really had money to do that, so...
Right, so the economics really didn't allow for slavery to be a viable model in the mountains. I mean, similar to Kentucky and Tennessee. I mean,
yeah, that's right. And, you know, there wasn't... West Virginia has, like, more small family farms than anywhere in the country.
Really?
But whenever it comes to, like, monocrop farming or subsistence farming, like, it's just so mountainous that it's really hard to find... you know, more than, like, 150 acres that isn't, like, halfway up a mountain, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So bigger farms in West Virginia, they're there, but it's not like you're driving through Virginia and there's just, like, acres and acres and acres of corn or soy or whatever. So that was just, like, it was a big difference in farming, too, and that part of what was in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Like, what does it mean to be from West Virginia? I mean, I'm sure you've had to do a lot of explaining, like you're doing now. Like, what is it, like, West Virginia? Oh, yeah, like, but what is it, I mean, what does it mean to you guys, or to you personally, to be from West Virginia?
Well, geographically, it's like, unless you're talking to someone who is familiar with Appalachia, which, you know, unless you're from there, you're probably not. Geographically, we're not really in the north. We're not really in the south. We're not really in the, like...
You're the southernmost northern state and the northernmost southern state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're just like in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
I think not a lot of people understand like where that is. Or they like ask me if I'm like live near Richmond, which isn't even in West Virginia. So like just trying to explain where it is
right.
Like half the battle sometimes.
But often when you leave, you don't understand where you're from until you leave it.
I guess, like, the biggest differences between, like, you know, being from West Virginia and living here is... I don't think I have that much of an accent, but people still like to correct me on, like, a lot of words that I say. That's just, like, you know, it, like, and it just... They tell me that I'm, like, saying them wrong.
Well, like, what words do you say wrong?
Like, I can't pronounce the word, like, people say collar. I say collar.
And collar?
Yeah. People are like, oh, you mean collar? Collar.
Like the collar blue?
Yeah. So I say collar.
You say, like, collar, like a shirt collar.
Yeah.
Collar. How about hollow?
Holler.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely collar. Actually, like, I didn't know that hollow was a word until, like, a few years ago. I thought it was just holler. And that's, like, the case with, like, a few words in my vocabulary. Like, none that I can recall right now. But it's just, like, a small example of, like, how people perceive West Virginia, especially, like, through their accents that were, like, slow, or, like, we're doing things wrong, or just because our dialect is, like, different and specific.
To me, I mean, honestly, like, it doesn't sound like, to me, anyway, except when you say, holler, is it being in New York for a while, or?
I think so, but when I go home and I'm around, like, my family and my mom and my grandparents, mm-hmm. it just, like, yeah, I can feel it. Come out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't sound like you have an accent. Like when I first was talking with you, I had no idea where you're from. I thought, you know, you could have said Connecticut.
Long Island.
Long Island, I'm from. You do not know Long Island. Mercifully, you're not from Long Island.
Early dawn, I was happy and free. I looked for my friends, but I never could find them. I
what are some other myths or fantasies that people had about West Virginia that you had to sort of disabuse them of?
I guess it's just like no one. People think that West Virginia is all agricultural.
Mm. I would think that they would think it's all mining. I mean, that seems.
That too. I mean, the mining industry is like it used. There used to be like a lot of manual labor, but it's mostly mechanized now, and so the mining industry doesn't exist like any in the way that it used to.
Mm.
You know, like. Most people would be, like, from mining families, and that is, like, a totally, like, dwindling existence.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's all, like, mountaintop removal mining and, like, strip mining. My grandfather worked at a chemical plant. There are lots of chemical plants in West Virginia. It's, like, it's just, for whatever reason, it's just, like, been this really vulnerable state for the past, you know, 150 years. And
vulnerable, like the how? Like, what do you mean?
Vulnerable to resource extraction. Or resource extraction, or just, like, you know, like, people with, like, dirty hands and dirty money coming in and just, like, dropping this big chemical plant, and all the people who live there just have to, like, deal with it. Because, like, there's not a lot of money in the state to, like, lobby against things that come in. And it's just, like, these things bring in jobs.
Right.
And people need to, like, feed their families. So, like, yeah, it's really, it's hard to, like, live in West Virginia and be, like, super liberal about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to be extreme in that direction, then you're going to be... you're going to be, like, betraying, like, at least 10 people that you know who, like, make a living through working on, like, resource extraction or at a chemical plant.
Mm-hmm. And how do you cope with that? Or how do you approach that, I should say?
I just, you know, I'm not going to work in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I used to be, like, pretty anti, pretty radical when I was younger. The older I get, the more, like, moderate I feel like I'm getting about the whole thing.
Mm.
Just because, like, you know, I've been lucky enough to have access to, like, other ideas and other ways to, like, live. And I've been able to travel and, like, get out of West Virginia. A lot of people there just, like, they just, like, get stuck there. Or, like, they need a job to, like, pay their rent, and so they just get sucked into these, like, really available jobs and industries that are, like, inherently evil. But it's, like, how evil is it if it's, like, supporting you financially?
Mm.
It's also just, like, economically, it's just, you know, a pretty, like, grim situation. The coal mining jobs are gone. The poverty rate is just, like, insane.
Yeah.
So people need jobs. And that's just, like, really what it comes down to most of the time.
How did you... I don't want to say get out or escape, but how did you come out West Virginia? Or how did you come to your politics, I should say? Was it living in a college town, or your family, or someone... Think something you read, or just you've just always been like this?
Well, I guess, like, like, where did it all start, I guess, is what I'm trying to think. I guess both of my parents are, like, I wouldn't call them, like, liberals, or, like, they don't even know that they can't even grasp the concept of, like, conservative or liberal. That doesn't, like, really exist to
mm-hmm.
most people down there. But they were, like, there's, like, a really big kind of, like, junky artist community in Charleston, which I grew up around. And so, basically, just, like, from a young age, I was just, like, a lot of times just like living on a whim with people who were my parents, but like we're also just like kind of kids themselves.
Right.
And so I don't really know what I got a taste of, but it was something like a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just, I got myself through college.
Mm. Where?
And at West Virginia University. And I landed this job at this little like food co-op, which was, you know, it's not like the co-op that you see in Albany, like the Honest Wait, or probably not like any co-op that you've ever seen. It's just like this little...
In West Virginia?
Yeah, in Morgantown. Mm-hmm. I was just lucky enough to walk in one day and they needed help, and so I started working there when I was 18. But there were some farmers there that ran CSAs, or like, you know, tried to grow asparagus and like would sell 3 bunches of asparagus to us. And so I made a few connections with these local farmers, and you know, retail sucks. We all know that retail sucks. I didn't want to do it anymore, and so I started farming with this guy named Sky Harmon, who had like a little startup. And so yeah, that's where it all started. And you know, like farming in West Virginia, it's not like farming in the Hudson Valley where jobs here are so available and you can like actually make a living doing it here. In West Virginia, it's like I like worked 50 hours a week and made like $8, and there wasn't really like an option of like moving up, because you're either working for a family or you're working for like someone who's just starting and like doesn't have the means to pay you.
Mm.
So
well, I mean, it almost sounds like it's been ever thus in West Virginia, like you're never gonna make money like farming in the mountains.
Right.
So you don't come from a like a farming family.
That's right. I don't come from a mining family.
Or an academic family, or
definitely not an academic family.
No.
Sorry guys. But, you know, my mom was, like, she has, like, a green thumb, and she's, like, an amazing... All the, like, older women I know in West Virginia are just, like, by necessity herbalists and botanists. It's kind of amazing. But, like, that's just, like, part of the tradition. But no, like, true academic stuff going on, but...
So were you the first person in your family to go to college, or...?
My mom went to college, okay. And my grandfather went to college, and, like, you know, my cousins, did they? I have a cousin that went to college, but it's not, like, you know, there wasn't, like, any real, like, fire under my ass to go to college, you know, that wasn't, like, that's not just, like, a family value. I mean, it was, everybody was, like, happy.
Right.
It was going, but it wasn't, like, oh, you have to go to college, you have to live this life. I had a lot of freedom. Just like make my own choices.
Mm-hmm. Now,
from a very early age. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, was that a function of just sort of West Virginia, or you junkie artists?
Oh, I think that was just like my situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, because I was thinking that's like, I mean, that can be wonderful and dangerous at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, had to like, I, you know, I'm lucky. I learned enough through watching to like. Avoid a lot of potentially crappy situations, because like you know, I've lost like a lot of friends to, there's a huge opioid crisis in Appalachia. I'm sure, like, you know, that's like the coverage that Appalachia gets, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the opioid crisis. But yeah, I guess I've seen like a lot of friends and peers and acquaintances just go down the tubes.
Really?
With that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just... Yeah.
But do you remember when you first became aware of that, and or how it started to affect you? Was it in high school or earlier, later?
I guess, like very, very, very young. I, like... Okay. You know, as, like, a kid seeing all of that happen, you're like, okay, something is, like, wrong with this, but I don't know why. Like, I don't have the, like, vocabulary to tell or describe it to people, or like even describe it to myself. But yeah, I guess just like as maybe like a preteen.
Like, where would you notice it? How would you notice it? Like how did it register in your consciousness in a personal way?
Prescription pills are just being passed around like candy. You know, even with like people my age, like 12 and 13. Super accessible, you know, like you would see people just like in Charleston, like nodding off. I used to hang out, I was a mall rat. I would take the bus to the mall, mm-hmm. hang out there. And there was just like this like big, like drug trafficking block in Charleston where the mall was.
Oh.
Just like, it was pretty raunchy. So, I mean, you know, I could look at a situation and know what was going on, because I had that, I don't know, keen sensibility for what those things looked like.
The image that I have now is, like, there's this mall with a bunch of, like, completely stoned 12- and 13-year-olds on, like, prescription drugs.
Yeah, or, you know, not always 12 and 13-year-olds. There's always just, like, also just, like, a huge homeless population in Charleston. And, like, also, it's just the people who are most likely to get addicted to prescription pills are people that live in rural areas, which is most of West Virginia.
Hmm.
You know, there's, like, yeah, so.
And why do you think that is?
Hopelessness, boredom, dealing with like inevitable emotional or physical pain. People who live there probably work like really manual intensive jobs.
Mm-hmm.
People's backs hurt. All of it's accessible. And like, even if like you don't have a prescription that you can take to a pharmacist, like someone can probably sell it to you.
Mm.
Because that's like how a lot of people make their money, too. It's just selling their
Thank you.
specific and potent, like, West Virginia pride.
Mm-hmm.
that, via music and, There's like a lot of celebration about the fact that we like seceded from Virginia.
So you're still giving it to Virginia?
What?
Still like giving it to Virginia?
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. Oh, yeah. and like other than that, there's just like it's just like such a rugged state, and I think that kind of bleeds over into people's personalities.
In what way?
Anybody you meet from West Virginia is, like, pretty rugged. Like, friendly as hell, but also just, like, pretty gritty people. Like, just hardworking, kind of used to just being, like, down and out, and, like, this is what you have to do to survive. Like, just like a lot of survivors. You know, obviously there's, like, money circulating a little mm-hmm. bit in the state, but it's very, 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 very concentrated to, like, a few people. It's also just, like, it's, like, a really haunted state. There's, like, a lot of folklore in West Virginia and, like, everywhere, but...
What are some of the stories or the lore, the folklore that would be common...
The most infamous one is the Mothman, which I am personally obsessed with.
Okay, let's hear, what's the story of the Mothman?
Well, I think it just plays into, more so than a lot of other places in the States. I think that a lot of people in West Virginia rely on, like, omens in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was telling you, like, both my grandmothers are, like, very superstitious.
Like, would you give me an example of a superstition?
My grandmother, Ella Scruggs, what's her name?
Ella Scruggs.
Ella Scruggs, yep.
Wonderful.
she thought that the, like, holiday of Halloween was just, like, a huge... like conspiracy, and it wasn't actually children at all. This is more of like a dementia superstition, but like
I think probably many superstitions began as sort of either like individual or collective dementia.
Yeah.
But
she thought actually it was like a bunch of like midgets dressed up that were just like pillaging the town and like with like absolutely zero, no proof of that ever happening, but that was just like what she thought and what she was going to think the rest of her life. And you know, I just like learned all of the like don't walk under the ladder from her, don't spill the salt on the table, black cats are bad, like all of the like really typical like superstitions. Mm-hmm. But like it was very serious for her. Mm-hmm. A very serious matter. And I just remember like walking into her like weird little like mothball house, and she would always have like dried herbs burning that I can't really remember like what they were to this day. And she would I don't know if she ever smoked tobacco, but I know that she would smoke mullein leaf mixed with like who knows what. But
mullein leaf?
Mullein.
Yeah. Oh, you have to explain that a little bit. Or would you please?
Mullein is just like an herb that mm-hmm. grows up here. It's like a lung cleanser.
A lung cleanser?
Yeah. Like a lot of people put it in smoke blends, tobacco, to kind of like compensate for what the tobacco is doing.
Huh.
Maybe that crosses over in some more of like the herbalism sphere, which is, you know. Mothman.
Mothman.
Yeah.
Is this is this an old story or is this a?
This is the story that late 60s or 50s.
Okay.
So there's like this like abandoned nuclear plant in this town called Point Pleasant, and it got shut. Like the facilities got shut down and it's just like basically this big concrete slab that is still standing. But there was talk about like this giant moth, like moth slash human body thing with big red eyes, just like hanging around, like a few different sightings that were mutually exclusive. And then, like, right before Christmas, there was this really big bridge that collapsed and killed, like, 50 people that were on the bridge. And people, like, reported Mothman, like, flying over the bridge whenever it collapsed. You know, like, whether or not this is true, I think it's still just, like, people are looking for just, like, reasons or omens. And I think that's, like, a way that people in Appalachia or any rural regions like make sense of their realities. But yeah, there's like this whole eco-touristy thing that revolves around Mothman now. There's like a museum and like bumper stickers and shit, which I have.
Mothman.
Yeah. Huh. But that's probably like the biggest, the like most popular West Virginia lore. There are just like collections of like books of hauntings, and there's like a railroad tunnel in Mingo County that is a lot of people have reported like seeing people like walk back and forth in the tunnels because there was an accident there in like the early 1900s. So yeah, tunnel hauntings. And, you know, the mountains themselves are, like, just kind of, like, very beautiful, but also very, like, foreboding in a way.
My argument with, like, the legitimacy of the Mothman being, like, a physical, like, in this realm a thing is, like, why would a hillbilly, like, make it up? Like, why would they out themselves as a crazy person in, like, a really small community? Like, you know what I mean? So
you feel like the jury is still out on Mothman?
I mean, I believe in Mothman, but...
You believe in Mothman?
Yeah, but then again, sometimes I'm like, what is crossing over? And, you know, that's a whole other interview.
Yeah, no, that sounds interesting. Yeah. So let's talk about the spirituality or the religiosity of West Virginia. Did you grow up in a church or any of that sort of any of that sort of thing, which is the vast majority of humanity does do? But
my parents are more or less agnostic. My grandparents are fundamentalist Christians. Which I like love them and they love me, but it's just like still, you know, we don't like breach that. Yeah, we don't go there.
You don't have theological discussions.
No.
No.
Sometimes, yeah, I just remember as like a young woman like being like more outspoken than I think I should have been. My grandma would sometimes tell me that I was like brainwashed. Yeah, but yeah, they're fundamentalist Christians.
And what does that mean to, like, how does that, like, I like, literally do not know any fundamentalist Christians.
They think that the Bible is not a metaphor, basically. They think that, like, everything that is written is, like, viably true.
So you didn't grow up in a fundamentalist household, but your parents did.
My mom did. Mm. My dad did not. My other set of grandparents, not went to church. Not particularly religious, though. Mm. It's more like a community, mm-hmm. like obligation. You know, like a lot of people who go to church. The state itself, I wouldn't say that it's in the Bible Belt, or like technically I don't think it's in the Bible Belt, but there's a lot of Baptists, mm-hmm. a lot of Christians, some like really random like Hare Krishna temples, maybe two, but other than that, I mean, there's still like snake charming churches.
Oh, fun.
West Virginia. Yeah.
Have you been to those?
I haven't, but that's like on my bucket list.
To go to a snake charming church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just like another thing that's kind of just like stuck in time in the mountains, snake charming churches.
Right. So, and that's when people get sort of the Holy Spirit and handle poisonous snakes.
Yeah. Just like relying on the Holy Spirit.
To protect them from,
yeah,
rather than their common sense to not handle poisonous snakes at all.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I had that much faith in something. Sometimes.
So tell me what you're planning on going back. So you're interested. You're doing farming, and farming is your thing.
Yeah, that's
right. You're committed to farming.
Yeah.
You like it.
Yes. No, I don't like it. I love it.
You love it.
I love it, and I hate it.
All right. So it sounds like a relationship.
Right. I guess I don't have any, like, neutral feelings about farming. It's, like, pretty, I mean.
What do you love about it?
I'm outside all day. I'm just, like, at the whim of something else. Nature. That thing would be nature. I basically had this like creative block for about 6 years, but then I realized that I'm using all of it in my work. So that's got my like creativity outlet covered. I like busting my ass for some reason.
Because you're from West Virginia. The state of trauma.
The state of trauma, that's right. The state of busting ass. and it's, and then I get to grow food for people, which is awesome and like such a necessity in the state that is just like a huge food desert.
New York.
West Virginia.
Oh, West Virginia is a food desert.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, we're not in a food desert in the Hudson Valley, but you know,
right.
Places in New York do have food deserts. It's not. Yeah.
So you like busting your ass and growing food.
Yeah.
And fitting into the world that way.
Yeah. I don't really have a niche for it here because there's enough of it here. The state doesn't need another CSA, or this area doesn't need another CSA. It just doesn't. I'd rather go somewhere and provide to people who need it. And also just like in a place where I'm like more familiar. Also, it's cheaper.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. So what's the most difficult thing about then leaving West Virginia, coming here? Is it the you found that the people don't get you on a fundamental level? Are New Yorkers like lazy compared to West Virginians?
No, I mean I mean sometimes I find myself comparing like New York and West Virginia, and sometimes it's just a matter of like I miss the place where I'm from, and that's just like so much of my memory is in this place that I'm not feeling like I'm getting that much footing here, and so I just want to go back to this other place that, and I think
where
I
you
think,
belong
kind of
West Virginia.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people have that feeling that's like really specific to West Virginia, where they're like, this place is like that's cool, I want to get out of here, and then they do, and then there's just like a really really strong like magnetic kind of like something that makes people miss it,
a lot. I think it has an effect on people, like, more so than a lot of places. Yeah.
So Long Island has sort of the opposite effect. I
mean. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But.
Well, I think that speaks to something special about West Virginia.
It is special. It's special, but I even though we've been talking for like an hour, I can't tell you how it's special. Other than what I've told you, and you can kind of like create that idea yourself based on like your experiences with whatever. But it's sacred.
Yeah.
Area of the world.
Hmm. Do you think it'd be difficult now to return, now that you've been out to the wide open Hudson Valley? You do realize the Hudson Valley is not, you know, what people think of when they think of New York.
Right. Oh, yeah. I know that. Yeah. I mean, this state, it's also just hard for me to wrap my head around this whole state to begin with. It's so big. It's going to be a battle. You know, I'm going to have to, like, I don't have any money to fall back on, like, at all.
Uh-huh.
The state is just underfunded. Land is cheap there. Starting anything there is hard because no one wants to start anything there because, like, it's probably not going to take off because nobody can afford to buy there. Like, why is someone going to put money into a CSA if they can't, like, afford necessities to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
There's like, I worked on a farm before I left that has, from like what I understand, maybe it's been a few years and it's different, but at that time they had just like pretty much cornered the CSA market and they had like almost 400 members. And so I'm just like,
whoa.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, I like starting from other than like the relationships I already have, I'll just be like super reliant on and just like knowing the like the lay of the land, I know that. But as far as growing a startup business there, I'm just like, how is that actually going to work?
Mm.
Even though like this.
Well, have you learned a lot here and how to do that?
Yeah, yeah. I think that whether or not I didn't know like exactly what I was doing when I moved up here, but now I can say
like a lot of people, especially kids who go to Bard.
I know. I mean, yeah. I'm just like moved up here on a limb. Just like, I guess a lot of people. So I like shopped around, applied for this random farm as like a manager. Got the thing. Moved up here.
Yeah, and probably like just like being from West Virginia was a bonus for manual farm labor.
Yeah, well, I wonder. I just, like, sometime, I don't know, I just never really know if people even know that that's a state or that's where I'm going to have to start from, like, total square zero, like, explaining where I'm from. Or if they know, like, enough about it to know that, like, nothing comes easy in West Virginia.
I think that's the best motto.
Yeah, nothing comes easy.
Nothing comes. You should have that on your license plate.
I know. Well, for a while it was open for business, and everybody was like, "Boo! Like, are you serious?
Take advantage of us."
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, haven't we had enough?
Right. Oh no.
But yeah. Nothing comes easy. I'm just gonna spray paint.
Nothing comes easy.
My,
yeah, I think we start. Or you could start Nothing Comes Easy Farm.
Yeah, that's better than all the names that have the words like hands in them or ground or brute.
Well, what do you think you're gonna miss about the Hudson Valley?
I've like worked with like the most badass lady farmers.
Really?
At
Sparrowbush.
Yeah, Sparrowbush and Ironwood. And Common Hands, and like just a little bit everywhere in between.
What is a badass lady farmer?
What is a badass lady farmer?
Yeah.
just a badass Landy farmer. Like, you know, like being a female in the manual labor sector is just like, you know, you're up against a few things.
Right.
Like people not.
Yeah, it's hard for you to lift things, and you always have to get men to do like things like that.
You know, so they say.
And then you get dirty, and you have yeah.
Like it was cute. Like whenever I worked at this farm, Ironwood, there were like, I don't know, like a photographer from a magazine company in Japan. I don't know what they were doing in the Hudson Valley, but they wanted to come and like take pictures and like interview someone that worked there. And they came and they were just like dumbfounded that there wasn't a man around to like, given they're like from Japan.
To tell you what, how'd you guys know what you do?
Yeah.
Without a man.
Or like, how do you lift things?
How do you lift things and organize yourselves?
Yeah.
And
you know,
who do you cook for?
Yeah, exactly. What are you doing out here? I mean, like, it's like in the back of my mind mostly at this point, because I've just, you know, been farming long enough to just be like, whatever. Like, I'm just going to, like, do what I do. But it's, yeah, it's like some people just can't get over it. And, like, I don't know how successful that would be in West Virginia without being, without, like, being called like some like crazy lesbo like witch farm or something.
That'd be a great name for a farm.
Crazy lesbo
witch farm.
I feel like that's like the next that's the next big Hudson Valley CSA farm. Or West Virginia. Naked baby farm or like whatever.
Naked baby farm?
Yeah.
are there a lot of naked babies growing?
We grow naked babies. That was like I worked at a farm in West Virginia where there was a baby, and sometimes it didn't wear diapers, and the whole town called it the Naked Baby Farm because there was like a woman with a baby. There seems to be some confusion about whenever I say, this is actually like almost has driven me crazy living up here. Whenever I say, there is no this afternoon, that like isn't. That isn't really what people say. It's this evening. Anytime after noon is this evening. And I think people get pretty sore with me here if I'm talking about 2 p.m. and saying this evening. It's like I don't know, for whatever reason, it's like a big deal for people.
So there's no afternoon in West Virginia.
I mean, like.
That's another great one. There's no afternoon. West Virginia, there's no afternoon.
Well,
we go
yeah.
from morning to evening.
I mean, maybe it was just like the people I was around or my family or like whatever. I don't, to this day, I still don't know if it's specific just to like my people or like if it's like a cultural difference because it's just not a choice phrase in my vocabulary that I can like pluck out and say. It's always this evening.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on.
on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all our way, if we keep on the sunny side of life. Side of life, it will help us every day, it will brighten all the way if we keep.